Well, hey everyone. This is Rick, and I'm making this video, well, for many reasons, I guess. I suppose the main reason is that I want there to be some record of the way I feel, my ideas, just who I was, really. It's funny, I always thought that, you know, I used to think a lot about suicide. It actually, believe it or not, it should have started a long time ago. It should have started when I was fucking born, actually. But, to tell you the truth, it didn't really start in earnest until the infamous teen training happened. Yes, teen training. And, man, I started thinking, wow, how could I do it? I wasn't the oldest. I was the oldest for a long time, but of course, at teen training, there was a bunch of girls there that were older than I was. But, you know, let me tell you, suicide is not something that you talked about with people. Anybody. Or, you know, are you going to turn into a fucking mean case? They beat the devil out of you. Or whatever. Just fucking insane. This is my weapon of choice. The K-Bar 9. Served Marines for many, many years. I changed the angle on mine. I learned a lot about knife sharpening recently. They come with like a 30 degree angle because these fuckers are abused. They're beat on, used for fucking everything. I only want it for one purpose, and that is taking out scum, taking out the fucking trash. So I wanted a nicer edge, a finer edge that cuts better. So I changed it to basically a kitchen knife edge, which is 17 degrees. And now, goddamn, I can fucking shave with this fucker. So, one shot, one kill. Okay, I'm sorry. I'm getting all off track here. Where the fuck was I? Suicide. Yes, suicide. Horrible. Horrible thing when adults contemplate suicide. But so much worse when you got a fucking little kid who is, you know, not born to be a messed up little fucker, but he's a little light, you know? She's a little light. And you just fuck him over because you're a sick fucking pervert and you don't have anything better to do with your life than to fuck up your little kid. It's just so far beyond me, I just can't fucking imagine it. But yet it happened. It happened right before me. It happened to all of you. Thousands of us. Some worse than others. The goal is to bring down the sick fucker's mama and Peter. My own mother. What an evil little cunt. God damn. How can you do that to kids? How can you do that to kids who sleep at night? I don't fucking know. Anyway, that's my goal. But I'm one person. I'm working under conditions that aren't that great right now because I'll only have a small window of opportunity to get the information that I need out of this person. I'm not trained in torture methods, which is what I'm going to have to make do. I got my drill here. The reason why I've got this fucking padding on it, which is to try to silence it a bit because I'm in an apartment. I got gags, fucking socks. Got lots of fucking duct tape. I got a soldering iron. Suit. Rather crude implement. I think can work wonders, especially if it's used in the right way. But I'm not trained. I don't know how to fucking do this. I don't even want to fucking do this. God damn it. I'm glad. You know, I'm glad that others of us haven't gotten to the point that I've gotten to where we really don't have anything to lose. You know, I'm happy. Because it
what it tells me is that, you know, people still have hope, that they're still going on. One guy called me the other day, he said that, and he knew what I meant right off the bat from reading that. He said that we're dropping like flies. Well, I don't know if we're exactly dropping that fast, but people are going out. I don't know. You know, what about these, you know, fucking perverts? You know, aren't they the real terrorists? Terrorizing little kids, driving them to suicide? Isn't that like murdering them, basically? You fuck with their mind so much that they can't go on? They really can't go on. Isn't that like killing them? Fucking bastards. Anyway. It's a war on terror. She has nightmares at night. I guess a lot of us do. I have nightmares. Not really about the same thing, but about the cult. She has nightmares about, you know, being dragged out of bed in the middle of the night to go have sex with Berg. Goddamn. I can only imagine what my sister goes through. She's telling somebody today how different my sister, this is Tetchy, became after the Tetchy series. It's just so sad to watch that. To see her retreat into herself. And now Sue calls me today and tells me how great, you know, my sister's doing. That's been actually one of the hardest things lately for me, is to have to, you know, pretend like I'm making peace with these fucking perverts. You know, you just want to grab them and rip their throat out. I've sort of faked it in my mind, you know, and I can keep going in the physical, you know, do good work, have a good job, you know, fairly nice apartment. But it's on the surface, you know, I've faked it in my mind, and I can't get out of it, you know, I can't find the smelling salt to wake me up. Yeah, so what am I supposed to do? You know? So, anyhow, I guess we'll see what happens. I hope that, you know, y'all keep going, whoever watches this video. I hope that, I hope for one, it helps to understand a bit where I'm coming from. But, you know, I sort of seem laid back right now, but Jesus Christ, you know, anger does not begin to describe how I feel about these people and what they've done. You know, I mean, rage, I get livid, you know, just, that's a little closer to the way I feel. And, yeah, it's gonna feel good to do some damage, even if it's not much, as far as I can go. That's what I'm gonna do. It's gonna feel so fucking good. Liberating. So, anyway, what can I say? I guess I've said it all.
Hello, and welcome. I want to talk in this video about female pedophiles, the lives they destroy, and the walls we construct to shield us from this truth, in effect enabling these predators. I'm going to be talking of things in this video that I guarantee most of you have never heard anyone say out loud before, but it's time they were heard. The video you just saw was the last testimony of Ricky Rodriguez, and this story is a perfect example of the devastation that sexual abuse of boys can wreak, and the story has had a strong effect on me over the years. Ricky's mother was Karen Zerbe, and she was a member of the Children of God cult, and the cult's leader was David Berg. Berg, he had the female cult members engage in something called flirty fishing, where they'd go out into wider society and have men impregnate them. Ricky, he was a product of one such union, and he never met his biological father. In Ricky's childhood, he was all over the place. He traveled all over with his mother and with Berg, and they had cult stations all over the world. And Berg, he had assumed the role of spiritual father to Ricky. Both Ricky and his sister Tetchy, they were subjected to sexual abuse throughout their childhoods. Ricky was witness to group sex involving adults and children from his earliest days. And as a child, he was subjected to sexual abuse by adult and teenage females. And this was later referred to as teen training. Even though Ricky was first sexually molested by an adult female when he was only 20 months old. These interactions were photographed and later published in a book called The Story of David Dito, and was promoted as a guide to parenting. And Ricky, he was held up by Berg as the next messiah who would lead his people. I mean, he had this weight placed on him and used against him. Ricky, he later met a girl whom he would later marry, and both of them eventually fled the cult, but the resentment, it built in Ricky, and he began to question the events from his past, and he sought his mother's whereabouts, because he was determined to get answers, and he was determined to get retribution for what happened to him and to his sister. And he'd been sexually abused not only by female members of the cult, but also at the hands of his own mother, and the pain of this was overwhelming. And the cult, it had since come under scrutiny, and their sexual practices had been severely criticized. And as a result, Ricky's mother Karen had gone into hiding. Ricky, he traveled cross-country. He finally tracked down Angela Smith, who was a close friend of his mother, and also one of the women who sexually abused him as a child. And he invited her to visit him. And in the book of David Dito, Angela Smith appeared under the name of Sue. And after Ricky's video testimony, Angela arrived at his apartment, and Ricky stabbed her repeatedly and then cut her throat. And he then drove cross-country and shot himself in the head in a deserted car park. And when we look at the rates of victimization, I mean, it's difficult to get a clear idea of the extent of sexual abuse against children. And in regards to female offenders, it's even more difficult. Because female abusers, I mean, they're rarely convicted. And cases are rarely escalated. And allegations from boys against female perpetrators, they tend to be met with disbelief or construed as consensual. But every person who laughs at or disbelieves or shames a male child is enabling pedophiles. And not only against boys, but also against girls. I mean, the sexual abuse of girls by adult females, it's an unspoken taboo, but it happens. And girls are suffering just the same. You know, and this should be an easy enough distinction to make, but bias is rife, you know, especially in the mental health community. And the rape of male children by adult females, it can continue unabated because mental health professionals, they have the same mindset as pedophiles. You know, the mindset that female perpetrators are victims, you know, victims of past abuse, and are only reaching out to their male victims in a show of misdirected love, or worse, out of reciprocal lust. And the fact is, we would rather feed our sons and daughters to these abusers than dare to criticize or even suggest females are capable of such abuse. And this is why the questioning of female nature and behavior, and the questioning of our cognitive bias, is so important. Because when we look at the abuses committed by mothers on their sons and how they manifest in later life, you know, we can talk about spousification, parentification, you know, how the son is modeled into the role of partner or husband, you know, whether the father is present in the home or not. And this is a common experience for many incarcerated men, because a staggering number of inmates come from single mother households, you know, where this practice was rife. And boys in this situation, I mean, they're used as a pawn against their father, or against other males. And through their mother's manipulation, they come to resent their father and see him and other males as competition. And the accountability for their mother's actions are then placed on the shoulders of the son. He can fill the role of emotional crutch, and she allows him to be the man of the house, so at any time she can avoid accountability and relay the guilt back onto him. So he learns that if he gives her attention and feeds her ego, she'll give him what he wants. Yeah. A new comic book or a new Xbox game, whatever. And mothers can use this to create division between the son and the father. And that father-son relationship, it can and often is destroyed in this way. You know, the child becomes an extension of her, not a real person. He becomes an object, you know, to make her feel good and to take responsibility for her actions. You know, to be manipulated and shamed when it suits her. And when it comes to sexual abuse, the female abuser will place the onus and guilt on the boy to initiate sex. And if he doesn't, she'll ignore him. Or she'll place more guilt on him for ignoring her. She'll deprive him. She'll shame him. And if she's his mother, she's his lifeline. And if, as a mother, I mean, she's above reproach. And hey, this is standard practice in the home, as far as he knows. So the manipulation runs deep. In a boy who's manipulated in this way, he grows up unable to trust his instincts and unable to trust his emotions and also the emotions of other people. Because every compliment, every kind word, he'll just interpret as a lie with no basis of truth, as he has no self-value. And he's incapable of seeing himself as worthy of love or affection. And one thing that's never addressed, and it's all too common, is that if a man has experienced sexual abuse as a child, once that man becomes a father, he can end up re-experiencing a lot of the aspects of that original abuse. And his environment, it becomes full of triggers. And he can experience flashbacks and very deep-seated feelings of guilt and shame, even just looking at his newly born child. Because every instinct in him is screaming to him to escape. And it can be an overwhelming feeling of loss and rejection. Because before the birth of his child, he had some form of stability when he was with his partner, maybe for the first time in his life. And he carved out a role for himself, even though he can be repeating a lot of the same behavior with her that he was with his abuser. But once a child enters the picture, he can experience a loss of identity. He can feel rejected and unwanted, that he's playing second fiddle to the child and that he's no longer of value to his partner. And this rejection by his partner, to him, is a reoccurrence of the rejection he experienced with his mother or a female abuser. Because his self-value as a child was dependent entirely on meeting his abuser's needs. And he lived through her filter of validation. And a female abuser will manipulate a boy by playing other men against him to invoke jealousy. And she'll play hot and cold, you know, withdraw affection or deprive them of basic needs to get what she wants. So the husband now experiences the same rejection by his wife. Yeah, the child is now taking priority, and the fear of rejection and inadequacy now comes back with a vengeance. And added to this is a very real fear that even looking at his child or even holding his child is a form of abuse. Because these men, they never learnt the difference between genuine affection as opposed to inappropriate or abusive contact. And this fear can be paralyzing for new fathers. And we tend to throw worst-case scenarios at men. You know, that if a male is abused, that they'll develop vampire syndrome and go on to abuse others. Though the overwhelming majority don't. Even though they don't, male survivors still internalize this message. You know, even looking at their newborn child naked or just holding the child, invokes crippling bouts of shame. So the father withdraws, and he often gets criticized for doing so. You know, that again, he needs to man up and be a father. And his wounds have been torn open, and he has nowhere to turn or anyone to confide in. I mean, after all, how can a man possibly experience these thoughts and emotions if he wasn't already a pedophile, right? I mean, we hear the same line over and over again at deadbeat dads. But we're all too aware of the role that the family court and social welfare play in evicting fathers from the household. And how men are forced into parental responsibility via paternity fraud and so on. But we never look deeper. Our new father can feel betrayed, he can feel cast off. And he can withdraw completely. He can act out, he can self-harm. You know, 'cause he feels he's worthless. And then seeks to prove this to himself and to the world. And often these men have stated adamantly that they were going to be the ones to break the cycle. That they weren't going to be like their father. That they were going to be role models for their son. But here they are. You know, living out the same cycle, and tortured by feelings of guilt and shame, and terrified of being around their child, unable to speak out. And most male survivors of sexual abuse, they'll never tell anyone of what they experienced. And if they had in the past, there's a high probability that they weren't believed, and experienced rejection and shaming as a result of it. And the fear now is if he confides in his wife, will he experience the same rejection? Will she look at him with suspicion? Because one thing that we do incredibly well in this society is churning out dysfunctional adults. It's like watching a conveyor belt. You know, one after another, the same issues, the same stories. And Ricky's story is no different to legions of other young men. You know, right from the get-go, he was made to feel defective. And when he was growing up, the thought of being apart from his mother, it would have terrified him. Because the world was seen through her eyes, and all her bias and insecurity would have been transferred onto him. And there was no separate identity. And this is a common occurrence with single mothers. You know, the hatred or suspicion of men is transferred, even projected onto the son. And as a result, he begins to distrust males and see masculinity as destructive. So he goes on the attack and sees threats everywhere. Or he rejects his masculinity, you know, disgusted by it, seeing women as the answer and men as the problem. And this can later manifest in severe hypervigilance or sexual dysfunction or a whole host of health issues. Yeah, the young man he puts on a front, but under the mask, he feels like a fraud. And he overcompensates because there's no foundation, and he feels he's defective, that he's not worthy. So he doesn't engage fully because he's terrified of being rejected. And he enters a spiral of shame. And we know full well that the rates of male victimization, that they're much higher than what's reported. And a male child, they won't report due to feelings of guilt or due to the very real possibility of being shamed or ridiculed or because of threats from their abuser or due to their relationship with their abuser. And that relationship may be their lifeline. Or they may have been manipulated into viewing it as true affection. And women can be especially manipulative in this regard. If you look at the media, I mean, we've seen the headlines and the TV movies of the week. Yeah. How young boys are portrayed as willing participants with adult females. And if they're not, then the message is, well, they're obviously gay. Or they're not a real man. And to make an accusation against a female, let alone a mother as a male, I mean, that threatens every belief we have regarding family, regarding female nature, regarding male and female sexuality and the society we live in, and so on. I mean, Ricky came out with it, but he had to obliterate himself in the process. Ricky, he knew his plan wouldn't pan out, that he wouldn't find his mother. He knew this. but he killed himself rather than live with the shame of the world knowing his mother molested him. Because really, what's the options for a boy who's abused by a female? Because boys aren't afforded the right to label what happened to them as abuse. And if they did, they would have to face how helpless they were in that situation. It doesn't matter if the abuse was traumatic or made them feel less than human or filled with disgust. Hey, they're a swinging dick. Men love that shit, right? I mean, to say otherwise would mean that almost every person you speak to would laugh in your face or just tell you how lucky you were or that you wanted it. And males can't speak out, so instead they shut off their emotions and they live dead inside. And what choice do they have? And everything right down the line, from the abuse they suffer to the reactions they encounter to the behaviors they act out, all of it is put back on the male victim. And the pervading message from all sides is that they were complicit in the abuse, that they enjoyed it, and are responsible. Their abuser, they manipulate them into secrecy. And the rest of us, we do all we can to reinforce this. And sexual trauma for an abuse survivor, it can become the default form of attachment and bonding, because the brain, it gets hardwired. And as adults, they reenact the abuse. They seek out abusive partners. And if there's no one there to abuse them, they'll abuse themselves. And that's their internal script, because that's what's familiar. And during abuse, the boy, they may experience sexual arousal and also experience a sense of being wanted. And in terms of body chemistry, it can become addictive. Your opiates, endorphins, they're released. And they experience pleasure as a result. And it's a chemical rush. And they state it can be like taking a hit of morphine. And when the child, and later the grown adult, experiences times of stress, they'll seek to recreate this experience. And this, unfortunately, becomes their way of coping. And the abused child, due to them being conditioned by the abuser, physically and emotionally, they'll often want to re-experience the abuse. And the male child, in turn, will be blamed as the one who initiated the abuse. And again, this is the same message that society reinforces on boys, that they're to blame and should count themselves lucky. So that becomes their internal dialogue. They internalize the shame. They take the guilt on their shoulders. And so they're riddled with self-loathing. They become driven by addictive physiological processes. You then have a walking punching bag. Someone who feels deserving of punishment. Then they act out. They self-medicate. They act out sexually or shut down sexually. Or they engage in compulsive behavior, all feeding a shame cycle. And if you look at female abusers, female abusers, they construct a fantasy for their victim. That he's her one true love, that he's special, and a cut above every other male. And this is giving him the illusion of control of the situation. And this leads to a child associating their self-worth with being an object of sexual desire. That their value comes from their ability to perform sexually. Now, all the while, this corrodes their self-esteem as they're being dehumanized. And this leads to a painful cycle where the child, then later the adult, seeks to re-experience a trauma, to gain mastery over it, and reclaim their sense of self. This is subconscious. And, of course, this is construed as consensual sex, not pedophilia, as these boys continue to engage in sex with the adult female. So much so that these same boys are sometimes forced to pay child support. And we've seen this. Now, you had an erection, so you're a willing participant, or you're a rapist, depending on the popular tide of opinion. In studies on the long-term effects of abuse by females on male children, it's been threadbare at best. You know, acting out, suicide, addiction, violence, incarceration, body issues, depression, issues with sexual contact. And you think about it. A man can't even admit to having issues with sex or having issues with touch by a female due to the abuse he suffered. I mean, when have you ever heard a man state out loud that he's uncomfortable with a woman's touch or with sexual contact with a female? I mean, he can't. Not in this climate. Well, men need to claim their right to be acknowledged as human beings, not as response automations. And anything less is perpetuating a cycle of dehumanization. And the overwhelming majority of male victims will not become abusers. But many are conflicted that they will be. Now, because this is what we see reflected in the media. And these men, they suffer in silence with this. And when something triggers them and they experience flashbacks of the abuse they suffered, they often believe that they are actually fantasies that they're experiencing. That these are fantasies. And these thoughts are so distressing to them that they can become paralyzed with fear or go into a spiral of self-harming. I mean, just imagine the isolation and distress this creates for men. And for a man to find his way out of the spiral, I mean, he needs to take back control. He needs to gain awareness. He needs to cast off the old self. He needs to grieve and he needs to move forward. And he has to acknowledge that he was a victim. And he has to kick denial in the teeth and admit he was powerless to stop it. And he has to agree to stop bringing the past with him into the present. And through focusing on his responses and through body awareness exercises, he becomes aware of what triggers those responses. Because men, we've been conditioned to keep our mouths shut like good little lapdogs and to never express vulnerability. And it keeps men separated and it stops them from communicating. And in many ways, it keeps them suspicious of one another. But you see, I mean, if you look online, we're seeing men speaking out now. I've left links to a few channels below. You'll see it in the low bar. You'll see channels from men like Messenger Rising, Nico Chosky, Gregory Becker. I can't speak highly enough of these men's contributions because it's men finally claiming their right to express their vulnerability and claiming that vulnerability, in the words of Barbarossa, claiming it as a concept that is independent of all things feminine and is uniquely male. And every man can be a torchbearer if he chooses to be. And the first step is understanding that he can make that choice. Because when a man begins to become aware of his own internal processes, he comes to understand that he has that power of choice. But very few men come to this realization. Now, he realizes the power of the word no. He builds a network of support. And addictive behaviors that work through and replace with enhancing behaviors. And he casts off the shell of who he once was and allows himself the right to grieve. I mean, a man gets to this point and you watch the fireworks. I mean, you want to see some pissed off men. You sit in a room with men who have come to this realization, who realize it wasn't their fault and who have finally found their voice. They see all that they've lost. And they finally cast off that bonding link that men have to trauma. And during this process, when a man casts off all the old ways of coping, he can become afflicted with depression. Because it's like grieving a death. Yeah, he can feel like he's adrift and nothing is familiar. That he's in a process of acquiring new ways of coping and ways of getting his needs met without punishing himself. And he's experiencing unconditional acceptance of all his faults, all his experiences, his pain, his past transgressions, all of it. He's experiencing that for the first time. And the memories remain, but they don't control him anymore. And that's the ideal scenario. And this can become a reality for many more men, far more men. And Ricky, his last phone call to his wife, it stated that killing someone was the hardest thing he'd ever done. And that all he'd ever wanted in this life was to be loved. Ricky, he was raised inside the cult as if he was royalty. And this caused him to retreat deeper inside himself, as he had his self-esteem ripped away from him. He was reduced to a dehumanized object. But Ricky, he felt a responsibility to avenge and correct what happened to him and to his sister, and to the thousands of abuse survivors from the cult. And the sense of shame, the isolation and guilt he wrestled with, it's what countless men and boys face every day. And in Ricky's words, he referred to a passage from the Bible that referred to a kind of fainting of the mind, a wounded spirit that can bear. He felt that he'd fainted in his mind and he couldn't get back to reality. And it's a familiar reality for far too many men. Rest in peace, Ricky.